The following is a conversation in a series of podcasts discussing topics and issues dealing with high technology crime and digital evidence recovery. These podcasts are presented by Search, the National Consortium for Justice Information and Statistics. This series is made possible through funding from the Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Tao, a high-tech crime training specialist at Search. With me today is Todd Shipley. Hi, Todd. Can you tell us about your background?
Sure, Elizabeth. Thanks for having me today. I'm retired from the City of Reno Police Department, where I was a detective sergeant, and I started the financial crime, cybercrime unit there in the early 90s. Been involved in digital evidence collection since then, and retired in 2004 from my police job and went to work for Search and managed the cybercrime training program there for a number of years. And then I decided it was a good idea to form my own company and try to make a difference in a different way by trying to make some tools for law enforcement to assist them in their investigations online.
Well, thank you for joining us. The previous podcasts in this series have focused on people and information searching as part of an online investigation. And our conversation today will focus on capturing and saving the data that the investigators have located. Todd, as we look at online investigation, capturing evidence and the data is one of the most vital steps. And how important do you see it for an investigator to take the time to capture and save the information in a way that he can use it or she can use it throughout the investigation?
Well, from my perspective, it's hugely important. I think it's one of the underutilized processes, though, for most online investigators, because we're in such a habit of surfing the web now and going through so much material and seeing so much that we don't often think to take the time to stop and grab the things that are out there at the time that we see it. Because as we know from the web, that things change rapidly. I mean, just watch a Twitter feed and it's, you know, changing immediately as you watch it. But websites, MySpace pages, Facebook pages can all change over time. So if you don't look at that page and capture what you see at that moment, by the time you come back to it, it may be different, changed, or gone. So it's very important that we think about that and make it part of our everyday process when we're doing collection of evidence off the internet.
Okay, and are there different needs for different levels, such as a probation parole versus the traditional law enforcement?
Well, certainly they have a different approach as to why they're out there. Parole and probation are looking for violations of their probationers or parolees, and law enforcement is looking for new crimes. And certainly they've got to approach things from a different venue. But the fact that digital evidence is digital evidence is the key. So no matter what they do and why they do it, they still have the same need to collect that information in a manner that's consistent with what the courts want when it comes to digital evidence, regardless of whether it's something off the internet or something off of a hard drive.
And as you capture that evidence, is there a difference that the forensic standards and the investigative standards when it's captured?
Well, digital evidence is digital evidence, as I said. And so there's really no difference in the standards per se about dealing with digital evidence. The things that we need to think about when we're dealing with information off the internet is similar to what we deal with from a forensic point of view from a hard drive. Date and time stamping, logging, hashing to determine, you know, that this data is the data that we wanted to collect and is not changed once we collect it. So the principles remain the same, but they're not often applied to the internet evidence. Historically, what we've always seen done, and I did, you know, early on, was you take a screen capture, or early on, we were video recording the screen or taking pictures of the screen because we didn't have the tools to be able to capture things off the screen very well. But the change now is that with the amount of metadata that's in online evidence, you can't just do screen captures or print screen to collect things anymore. And so we have to be cognizant of the fact that the information on the web, on a server someplace else, as we pull it to us through our browser, is still digital evidence and needs to be collected in a manner consistent with what we already know from digital forensics on hard drives. Capture that data, date and time stamp it, use the system log times to log what we do, as well as hashing that data set so that we know that it hasn't been changed later down the road.
Are there any best practices that you can give to an investigator to follow for capturing the data at the scene?
Well, as with anything on the internet, the investigator needs to be prepared when he goes online, if he's doing an investigation, to record whatever he's doing contemporaneous to when he's doing it, because he may not have another chance, as you say, to get that data, especially if he's doing a chat with somebody. He may not have another time be able to record the same information, and certainly he won't be able to record that same information on that chat if he doesn't have tools in place to document what he's doing. And that can be a variety of different tools. There's screen capture tools, video recording tools that can capture that information, but there's no real standard per se about that just yet. The courts have been accepting most screen capture tools, video recording tools to show that they're chatting with somebody, but there isn't a lot of standard out there per se, other than the fact that there's got to be some contemporaneous collection of that information as it's happening versus going back and trying to recreate it later.
Does this also pertain to the on-scene investigation? If a search warrant and you go actually to a suspect's house, is it the same?
Well, you know, that's a whole nother set of problems. If you're going there and seeing things like on his screen, I mean, historically, the practice has been to photograph what you see on the screen before you shut the system down. Or as we've, you know, taught at Search for a number of years now in the advanced responder course, that there's certain running information we want to collect on that computer before you shut it down, because there is a ton of information as well as the RAM that we want to collect. So certainly there are things that we want to capture contemporaneous to that event. Otherwise, we're going to lose it.
Okay, and as we look at what we capture and how we capture it, I know that it's nice to have policies in place to cover the practices. In your experience, have you seen that organizations usually have these policies in place?
That's an issue that's dependent upon the agency. Some agencies have been fairly good about developing policy and procedures to deal with this. Most haven't, because most of the time what we see nationally is that you have one or two people that are the go-to people for the digital crime piece. And it's because those investigators or those officers have taken an interest in that topic and have decided that that's what they want to do. Most of the time, an investigator is not going to take the time to write policy. And if he's not done it for his own work, most likely the administrators have not written a policy regarding this either. So it's imperative, though, that agencies develop policy in this aspect, because it helps to protect the officer and helps guide the agency on where they need to go when it comes to digital evidence, whether it's a dead forensic situation or an internet investigation.
I agree completely. Where can an agency go for resources to develop a policy if they don't currently have one?
Sure. I think that's a great question, because there are some good resources out there for agencies to look at. And certainly one of the first places I'd recommend and always recommend is going to the National Institute of Justice's guidelines that they put out a number of years ago. They're a little bit dated, but they still are very effective in giving guidance as to where and how digital evidence should be collected and dealt with. Myself and a lot of people were involved in producing those documents, and they're still a great resource for agencies. Another place that's got just come out this past year is the International Association of Chiefs of Police have got a social media policy website and some information up there for agencies to use to write policy about social media. You can also go to our website. I put together some model policy pieces for social media undercover operations, because I feel so important about the policy piece. Law enforcement investigators and officers may not think that policy is always a good thing, that it's restrictive, but the thing is, policy also helps protect them. And if the agency doesn't have a clear policy, particularly when it comes to social media and its use, whether it's undercover or just in general to communicate with the community, they've potentially are leaving themselves open for some liability situations that they wouldn't otherwise know they have.
And if you look at these policies, is there any verbiage that you feel is most important to have to protect that agency and investigator?
I think that just a clear policy of what they can and can't do, when they can employ techniques and when they can't. The agency's got to decide what their policy is going to be for the given situation. And I think it's important that it be reviewed, obviously, by their legal team, so that they understand and clearly pass on what an officer can and can't do. If it's a situation undercover, how they can implement their online activities. If it's just the basic use of social media to communicate with the public, what's the limitations of that officer and how he can and can't communicate? So it's just spelling out the rules for the basic investigator or officer so that he knows what he can and can't do.
And once an agency has some policies in place, I know that things change so fast on the internet and with technology today, but how often should these policies be revisited?
Well, that's a great question because, you know, policies oftentimes don't get ever revisited till something happens, makes the policy come into question, and that may not be for a few years. But when it comes to, in particular, the online things, they've got to be reviewing that at least annually and sometimes more often because as the technology changes, the policy, even if it was just written, may not be effective as it should be based on how the technology changes. With social media, nobody would have guessed how the explosion of its use would affect law enforcement in just a couple of years. And it's changed a lot about how law enforcement looks at many things on the internet and investigations in general. So it's something that has to be, you know, looked at, like I said, at least annually, if not sooner, depending on how the technology changes. And that's a real problem for law enforcement because sometimes we don't always grasp the changes very well and how it's affecting us. And so it's something that, you know, you've got to take a real hard look at and the agency's got to be aware of and pay attention to what's happening and be involved in the various organizations from a law enforcement perspective where you can, you know, stay on top of this, like, you know, High Tech Crime Investigators Association or any of the others that are out there that can give you the kind of information and access to other people that understand this information so you can make those informed decisions.
After an agency has chosen the data capturing tool that will work best for them and their agency, they need to inform those who need to use it. How does an agency best implement data capturing tools?
Well, another good question. Once again, there's got to be a policy about how you're going to implement this because the tool is just a response to that policy and what they're going to be able to do. So they've got to understand the policy and what they're going to do and how they're going to do it and when they're going to use these tools. And then it's a matter of training. Now, training fundamentally on tools is important because the investigator or officer needs to understand what the tools can and can't do because there's always limitations to what they can and can't do, especially on the internet. There's no tool that does everything on the internet and collects things the way you want. It's just a fact of how the internet's built. And so they need to understand what the tool's limitations are and how effective they are in given situations. Training becomes a key. And now that can be done not only on site, which is a great way to, you know, impart things, but, you know, virtually through the internet, webinars and other means can easily be used to educate people on how to better investigate things on the internet.
And as we know, the financial climate in law enforcement is a constant struggle. Looking at the tools that are available, do you know any funding options that they can look to help with costs for these tools?
Sure. I mean, that is a huge, you know, problem right now with law enforcement in general nationwide, and it's going to continue to be that way for a while, as we know. There are limited funding sources. NIJ has limited their funding this year. DOJ has to a lot of things. The one great organization I know that's out there, if they're doing child exploitation investigations, is Innocent Justice, InnocentJustice.org. They've got a funding mechanism where they'll go out to your local community and get the business people to donate funds for a specific project if it's related to child exploitation investigations. And they're a great organization to help fund tools. You tell them what you want and they'll go out there and get the money raised to fund that project. So privately, that's probably the only one out there. Federally, the funds are getting slimmer and slimmer. And so they've just got to be aware of when the funding's released from DOJ and make application for some of that stuff that's out there available to them and at the state level too.
Todd, I know you've been doing some research with the University of Nevada. Can you explain what project that you're working on?
Oh, sure. We got funded last year to do some research in anonymization, how criminals are using anonymizing tools to hide themselves and what can we do to try to find them. And so the past year, we've been working with the Computer Science and Engineering Department at the University of Nevada and a core group of students to try to review some of these things, look at how anonymization is being used, and try to develop some tools to not circumvent, but at least allow us to identify people using some of these tools. Now, anonymization is not an easy thing to get around. If somebody's really good at what they're doing, they can hide themselves. But we've developed some tools that are going to be released here this spring that are going to help law enforcement identify some people that are using anonymization like Tor and some of the other tools that are out there. So it's a real exciting project because I wasn't sure in the beginning how effective we were going to be able to be at this because, you know, as people know, Tor is unbreakable. But there are ways to get around it, and there are some things that you're able to do through social engineering and some other tricks that we'll demonstrate to our law enforcement customers about how you can find people and identify their real IP addresses, even if they're using anonymization. So this has been a lot of fun. We're going to be working with Bob O'Leary and the Electronic Crime Center of Excellence in New Jersey for release of this stuff in our product that will be hopefully free to law enforcement, or at least a nominal cost, because there's no funding on the grant currently to pay for the release of it, but we're trying to minimize costs to the agency so we can get it out to them as soon as we can.
On that, how would an investigator follow up with the release of this program?
Well, if they want to contact me directly, I'll get them what we have. Like I said, we're hoping the product is going to be completed hopefully this next couple of weeks, and then we're going to be releasing it through the Electronic Crime Center of Excellence in New Jersey as the focal point because they're vetting their law enforcement candidates. So if you go to their website, you can actually log in and get vetted, and then they'll be able to get the material once we put it up on their site.
Great. And I would like to circle a little bit back around to your background. You're the president and CEO of Vera Software Company. And I would like to know what your thought and your goal was behind building this company.
Well, what I saw for a number of years was that the computer forensic industry was a very big industry and it continues to get bigger with electronic discovery, but there was no tools being built specifically for the online investigator to aid them in collecting information off the web and doing so in a manner that was consistent with what the courts wanted for a piece of digital evidence off the web. So I looked at the problem and said, hey, how can we solve this? And came up with an idea, found some software engineers and started building some products to be able to help the investigator collect that information off the web.
Can you describe the tools and resources that you provide?
WebCase is our premier product that was designed solely as an evidence collection tool for law enforcement and since been and has been adopted by the civil side for investigations. But I originally designed it around the law enforcement problem that there was no tools out there to aid law enforcement investigators collect things off the internet. And so the tools was designed basically as that collection piece. It's a desktop application that allows the investigator to log in, set up his case, set up an undercover identity if he wants to, and then go out and collect things off the internet. We control Internet Explorer. We can grab the entire web page, document it, take snapshots, collect the source code, video record things, geolocate the IP addresses, automatically collect the IP domain registration information. And as we do all this, everything is date and time stamped and hashed so that it becomes a real piece of evidence. And then at the end, he can produce a report with all these things in here in the report that includes the date and time and the hashing of all those data sets. So it's a tool specifically designed around the needs of the law enforcement investigator to collect information off the internet. We've also got some other things out there that we give away free. We've got a toolbar that we give away free that's got some great resources for trying to find people and businesses and things on the internet, as well as our Internet Investigators Toolkit that is some basic IP tracing. It's a little Java tool to go out there and collect some things. We've also got another tool coming out here hopefully next month to help them easily examine pages of a website that will pull out the metadata on photos and stuff like that so they can just look at things and identify what's there. So our whole intention is to provide tools that help that investigator identify information and collect it off the internet.
What are the advantages of your data capturing tool over other tools that are on the market?
Well, sure. I mean, there's a lot of great resources that we've used historically. A lot of them are, you know, I did when I was a law enforcement officer to do data capture. The advantage of our tools, it was designed from the ground up as an evidence collection tool. The other thing is screen capture tools. Most of them have been designed to be video or, you know, photograph editing tools and not evidence collection tools. And our tool is solely an evidence collection tool so that it can document what that investigator sees. And like I said, do so in a manner consistent with the law and make that evidence legally admissible based on how we capture it.
Okay, and I know that you mentioned that some of the tools that you have are at no cost, but what is the price point for your Webcase?
Webcase is $995 for a single user license, but that is one dongle that can be either put on, you know, you can attach to multiple computers, or if you have one computer that's dedicated to the internet, and you don't have people working all the time, you can have multiple users log in. So most agencies get a single copy depending on what their needs are, unless they've got people working on the internet, you know, all day long, and they need individual copies to use to document what they're doing.
Payne, you mentioned above that you have created some policies and also a new tool coming out that will be able to help investigators and agencies. Where can they go to find the information and to contact you?
They can contact me at todd@vereesoftware.com directly, or as soon as we get the information ready, it'll be up on our website, and it'll also be on the website for the Electronic Crime Center of Excellence back in New Jersey as soon as we get everything released, but that's probably not going to be till mid-March, it's looking like now.
And can you give us the website for your company?
Sure, it's www.vereesoftware.com.
We really appreciate you taking the time to share your knowledge with us. This online investigation, it continues to change, it continues to grow, and I know that there's always knowledge that the investigators need, and I know this will help them with it. In closing, I'd like to get some of your final thoughts about the online investigations and trends that you see and the future of where we're going.
You know, trend-wise, I think what has astonished everybody is the wide acceptance of social media. And law enforcement is, you know, finally, you know, starting to look at it and deal with it a lot better. You know, trend-wise, social media is going to continue to be something that everybody adopts and uses because it's gone across, you know, age limits. Previous to the social media adoption, the technology and people online were, you know, probably a certain age, certain type. But with social media, everybody's involved, from small children to, you know, elderly people. And that means that there's a lot more opportunity for people to be victims, as well as there's a lot more opportunity for, you know, criminals to hide and use the social media as a means to commit crimes. So I think the trend is going to continue that social media, internet investigations are going to be the place where law enforcement needs to focus time and effort. Now, whether they do that or not is another issue, because I still hear and see things out there that, you know, it's not my problem that the crime occurred on the internet, and agencies, you know, aren't investigating cases, you know, don't think that they need to worry about victims of crime on the internet. You know, crime on the internet is still crime. And if there are victims in that your town, it's still in your town. And those things need to be investigated and at least need to be reported, because one of the big problems we have as law enforcement in this country is we don't know the magnitude of the crime, because we have no central repository for cybercrime cases. There's no requirement by the FBI under the Uniform Crime Reporting Statistics that all law enforcement agencies do to report cybercrime. That there's no, you know, requirement to do that. We don't really know the magnitude. I mean, we've got some good anecdotal stuff. The National White Collar Crime Center's, you know, Internet Crime Complaint Center has some great statistics, but that's all self-reported stuff that people took the time to go out there and report it to them. So we don't really know at a local level how much crime there is, because we're not reporting it and recording it very well. So I mean, that's going to continue to be a problem into the future. Now, the future of where we're going with, you know, online investigations, wow, you know, it's hard to guess. Like I said, social media, nobody would have guessed that that was going to be such a big thing. You know, when MySpace came out, everybody's going, wow, you know, how many people can actually do that? But now that, you know, Facebook is over 800 million users or whatever crazy number it is now, it's not going to go away, because people like it. People want to do that. People want to be engaged. And the amount of information that's out there on the social media media sites is what law enforcement needs to really tap into from an investigative point of view, not only for the criminals, but to identify victims and, you know, other things about their cases, because people are putting so much information out there. And the other thing is, you know, the future of online investigations, we need to rethink the scope of our physical investigations. If you got a crime scene and you go out, and I've been saying this for a year and a half or two now, you go to that crime scene, you got a dead body in the street corner, you got a gun on the street corner, you got a cell phone. You know, we pretty much know how to deal with this crime scene. We go there, we control it. We got a cell phone now. We got a guy that comes out, you know, takes the information out of the cell phone forensically, brings out a Cellebrite and, you know, gets all the information off of it. Think about what's happening with that crime scene now, especially if it's a gang shooting or something similar, and you had a lot of younger people around there when it happened. What are they immediately doing? They're getting on their smartphones, they're getting on their cell phones and tweeting, you know, JoJo just got shot at, you know, wherever. And they're talking about this. So when we go to the crime scene, are we thinking about how large that scene has now become? Is it just that local scene where that dead body is, or is it out in the virtual world also? And are we thinking about when we get to that crime scene, I need to start looking on Twitter or some of the other, you know, potential places for the victim's name being used or his moniker being used, and to identify potentially some other potential witnesses or suspects based on what's going on in the virtual world contemporaneous to that shooting? And so we need to rethink some of what we're doing when we triage the crime scenes, because there is a whole nother part of the information that's available to us that we may not be thinking about or collecting. And that's what's on the internet in some of these social media sites.
Absolutely. The virtual world is growing minute by minute. Everybody has a smartphone and everybody is using that to get on their social media and taking pictures and using the video. And those crime scenes have definitely gone outside the scope of the old traditional crime scene.
Exactly. And I think we need to rethink what our policy is for going to a traditional crime scene. Are we taking laptops there? Are we getting online when we're there and thinking about the bigger picture of what's potentially out there? Because people are doing it. They're posting the videos, they're posting comments or whatever about the crimes as they're occurring. And are we looking for them as law enforcement?
And what do you see for the future of Verisoft?
You know, we're going to expand. We're just trying to, you know, get the right tools out for the audience. We're making some changes in our next version of our tool to include a bunch of neat stuff. And we're just trying to be able to get the information out there and the tools that investigators need to be able to do their job better and staying up with, you know, what's happening, particularly with social media, and being able to collect the information that investigators need.
I know being able to meet the demands of that virtual world that we just spoke about is a never-ending process, but I know that you guys do a great job with your product to try to tie those together.
Well, we're trying, and you know, it's a challenge because, as you said, the internet changes so much and the technology changes. It's always a challenge to try to stay on top of what's going on. And you know, I'm on the internet, you know, constantly all day long, looking at things, trying things, looking at tools that are out there and other things. And it's a challenge for me, you know. So I know it's a huge challenge for law enforcement who isn't, you know, able to do that all the time because they've got the cases to investigate and other things to do. So it's difficult for law enforcement to stay on top of it. And that's why, you know, we try to do that so they don't have to.
Great. And I know you mentioned it before as far as contacting you personally and also your company. And I'm sure that the investigators who are listening to this will seek you out. And I'm sure that your knowledge and information can continue towards them at that point. Todd, I thank you so much for taking the time to share your knowledge and being part of the podcast that Search is doing.
Not a problem. I appreciate you asking me, and this is a great tool, I think, to get a lot of good information out to the investigators.
Thank you for taking the time to join us for this conversation. This project was supported by Cooperative Agreement number 2009-BEBX-K030 with the Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Bureau of Justice Assistance. Points of view or opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the guest and moderators and do not necessarily represent the official position or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice. From all of us here at Search, thank you for listening to this podcast. We hope you will join us again for another edition of Search's High Tech Crime Podcast Series.